Good evening, we're doing Mishlei, we're up to what they call the 27th chapter, the 13th Pasuk. Kach bigdo ki arav zar.
Ta mère qui est dans le coma, elle est sur son fauteuil, et dans le coma, elle va te prier dans les flammes.
Uvead nochria chavleu. Kach bigdo. Take his garment. Ki arav zar, because he gave collateral. He signed. He signed as a co-signer to a stranger. It's his fault. Who asked him to do it? So very often we cave in and we do things we shouldn't be doing and ultimately pay the price because we caved in. Can you co-sign this loan for me? We feel like we shouldn't say no. Could you please co-sign the loan for me? Please? Is it okay? Will you be there for me? Shlomo HaMelech says, if you co-signed for a stranger, so you should know, they're perfectly legitimate in taking your clothing. You co-signed. And sometimes a person tells himself, she's a poor woman, let me help her. That's why Shlomo HaMelech ends with the female. Uve'ad nochriya. So he co-signed for a woman he didn't know. Chavaleo, take it away. He signed. He took responsibility. We are tempted in life to think best case scenario. And we should try to train ourselves to think worst case scenario. What will happen if this fails? You enter a business deal, ask yourself what will happen if it fails. I have a very good friend, really good friend, who's he has a few successful businesses. And one day he came to ask a halachic question. And after the halachic question, he says to me, can I ask you a business question? I said, okay, what do I know from business? We'll think together. So he says, I'm being offered the following deal. There's a young man who's very problematic. He's not so honest, he's not so successful, but his father's a multimillionaire. And his father has seen my businesses do well, and his father told me, take him on as a partner, and I'll back any losses. I want him to have success in his life. I'll help you guys succeed. Take him as a partner, working with you, he'll grow. So he said to me, what do you think about the deal? So I said, no brainer, stay away. So he said, but why? I could open this business with him and have millions of dollars to back me. I said, you have a promise of millions, but you have a problem that you know is a problem. Meaning, what's the worst case scenario? He'll rob the business, he'll put you in debt, he'll convince his father that you guys are the liars, not him, that you guys destroyed the business. You know he's a problematic person. You know you're entering a problem. How bad the problem could be, you don't know. You have your business that's doing well. What do you have to look for problems for? Go look for a healthy partner. Don't take on a sick partner because he has the backing of a wealthy father when you don't know what problems he could bring you. You have no idea. So no way. We have to try. And till today he thanks me. Till today he says, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know why I was so attracted to enter that business deal, but I'm happy I didn't. And we have to know to think what's going to happen if this fails. This is a very important rule. I begged a friend of mine to think this through. A friend of mine went to work for someone whose reputation was that he didn't care for his workers. He was nice to you so long as he benefited from you, but the second he thought he could do better with someone else, he fired you. And so I told my friend, you have to think what'll happen on the day where you'll have a bad day, and it won't be in his interest to hold on to you, and you'll need him as an employer. And he won't be there for you because he doesn't care for you. That's his reputation as an employer. He said, yeah, but he pays well, so that's fine. I said, fine, but Shlomo HaMelech teaches us, take into account the bad day. Take into account the worst case scenario. When you co-sign for someone, you like to think they're going to pay off their side. You're not co-signing because you believe you'll pay. You're co-signing because you believe they'll pay. You're willing to give that security. But what'll happen if they don't pay? Can you really live up to that worst case scenario? And the same is true with every business deal. A businessman once told me, an investment banker, he said, a deal is gauged by its out. You want to know how good a deal is? You gauge it by how quickly you can get out. How little damage do you have when you get out? Every deal you enter, you're entering because you believe it's profitable. Every person that lost entered something because he thought he would win. So there's always that chance that you're wrong, you're going to lose. So you have to ask yourself, how quick is your out? How much damage is the out? Kach bigdok ya'arav zar. Shlomo Amar says, take his garment, because he co-signed for a stranger. He put himself into that risk. And even though it means it'll cost him his clothing, the shirt off his back, Shlomo Amar says, take it. He signed. You don't have to bite the bullet. Someone else co-signed. You try to limit your risk. If someone else co-signed, so they took that risk. Very often afterwards you say, why should they bite the bullet? It's not their fault. Wait a second. I have to bite the bullet. That's what they co-signed for. Who asked? They shouldn't have co-signed if it was a stranger. If it was a relative, they're willing to take the fall for them, fine. So Shlomo Amar says, take it. Pasuk Yud Dalit. Mivarech Reyehu Bekol Gadol Baboker Hashkehem. If a person early in the morning every day blesses his friend, so we'll give the following scenario. You walk into Beis Medrash and you say, Shmerel is such a nice guy. Every time I need a loan from him, he gives it to me. Shmerel is a great guy. Now you do this often enough, what's going to happen? Anytime anyone here needs a loan, they're going to go to Shmerel. You didn't do him any favors. But I blessed him. It's considered like you cursed him. Because that's not doing someone a favor to publicize how nice they are. Bless them every morning out loud. Chazal say that's Bilam. That Bilam raised his voice to bless us. We have to pay attention when people bless us or praise us. Sometimes they're hiding what they're really feeling. You have to be very careful when someone... they're a little bit too excited. I'm so happy to see you. Right? That big smile. You have to take a step back and ask yourself, really? Right? Right. Got to be very careful. And that's Mevarech Reu Bekol Gadol. Baboker Hashkem, he does everything to seem like he's excited. Early in the morning, he's very loud, and he's blessing you. You're my pal. Be careful. This is this is a rule in understanding people's hidden motives. We once had a young man who was dating a young lady, and things were getting serious. And then the young lady's father asked me for a meeting, so we met, and he started asking me questions about the young man. And then he looks at me and he says, "We have nothing to hide." I was thinking, okay, so I understand you do. How did that come up? Right? The guy looks at me and says, "We have nothing to hide. We just want to make sure the guy is legit and everything's legit." I came back to the guy and I said, "Don't get engaged so fast. They're hiding something." Shlomo HaMelech says, "Mivarech Reu Bekol Gadol Baboker Hashkem." If he's blessing you early in the morning, very loudly, Kilalate Chashev Lo, consider it a curse. Be wary. Think about what just happened. And Shlomo HaMelech, that's what he told us in the beginning of the book. He's going to teach us to be cunning. He's going to teach us to pay attention. What's really happening here? if we pay attention, very often we can prepare for life. Part of what we're trying to do in life is to try and not be caught by surprise. At the end of the day, there are surprises in life, but very often, if we pay attention, we can see the things coming our way. But most often, people would rather bury their head in the sand and not see the things as they evolve. Shlomo Amar says, pay attention. Delef Tored V'yom Sagrir. When you have a drip in the house on a cold, wintry day, and you can look at the house and say, it's okay, most of the house is covered from the rain. It doesn't work that way, because the drip makes it that the whole house starts being wet and cold and damp and spritzes on everything. Says Shlomo HaMelech, Veishet Midyanim Nishtava. That equals a wife who's always fighting. If she's always quarrelsome, if she's fighting over everything, every little thing she's got to fight, so that's like the drip in the house. You have the house, everything's great. No, it's not. Until you fix that drip, it's very annoying, and it's as though you've diminished all the value in the house. Well, the same thing is Eshet Midyanim. If she's a woman that's always picking fights, so then Nishtava, she equals that that drip in the house. Whoever thinks that he's going to be able to hold on to her, he thinks, I'm going to be able to hold on to her from going out. Shlomo HaMelech is talking about over here a woman who is not faithful. Someone who thinks he can hold down his wife when she's not faithful in her nature, tzafan ruach. It's the equivalent of thinking you can hold down the wind. People who are unfaithful will find ways to get around every protection you try to create. It won't work. You cannot protect yourself enough. And that's another important rule that Shlomo HaMelech reiterates in Mishlei. When you come in contact with things that are vile, you walk away dirty. You can't assume that you'll deal with a traitor, with a swindler, and you won't get hurt. And we see that with Yaakov Avinu. He's going to win Lavan. No, he didn't. Right? You deal with a traitor. So who won? Lavan got him to marry both daughters. And in the end, Yaakov Avinu buries Rachel Imenu, and it's all Lavan's fault. So Rachel shouldn't have taken the trophim, but why did Rachel take them? Lavan's giving chase, and Lavan corners him, and Lavan yells at him, and finally, under pressure, he says, whoever has the trophim will die. Why do you have to say that? You see, at the end, Yaakov pays the ultimate prices. He has quarrels within his family, he doesn't have a normal family structure, he has four different wives. Everything plays itself out in a convoluted way, because he went into dealing with a traitor. So you look at it and you say, Hashem wanted it this way. But you also have to notice on the pshat level that Yaakov Avinu ended up being swindled on the ultimate level. And he said, I can handle him. Shlomo HaMelech says, no, you can't. If there's a woman that cannot be trusted, if you think you could hold on to her and keep her faithful, it won't work. That's the story we have of of Pappus, right? Pappus was married to Miriam, and Miriam was out to cheat on him. So he'd lock the doors and lock the windows when he'd leave the house. And his wife still cheated on him and didn't work. So Chazal didn't approve of his behavior, but he also obviously had good reason to be concerned. Doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. You can't force a person into good faith. That won't happen. V'shem en yamino yikram. And just as a person has to pour oil on his right hand to pure himself from leprosy, from tzaras, shemen yamino, oil on his right hand, yikra. That's how he is considered. So it's as though he's calling the oil on his right hand. In other words, he's calling for trouble, for disease upon himself. Shemin yemino, the oil on his right hand is the cure for the disease. Yikra, so that's like saying he's calling for medication. In other words, he's calling for illness. And there are certain scenarios where you're asking for trouble. That's the way Shlomo Melech is saying. Asking for trouble is like asking for a cure. Asking for medication is another way of saying asking for illness. That's the pasuk says shemen yemino, oil on the right hand, which is the cure for tzarad yikra. That's what he's calling out for. In other words, he's inviting disease. He's inviting problems. And this is again an important concept. Very very hard to apply in real life, but it's an important concept that sometimes you're just asking for trouble getting into something. We'll take a few examples. They call you up from the lottery and they say, we have a lottery every day, and every day there are two winners, and you are guaranteed to have two wins every month. You just give us your credit card, guaranteed you'll have two wins every month. So if you'd stop and think about it for a minute, you'd realize it's impossible. There's no way that those wins will outweigh, and they'll explain it to you. Don't worry, we buy things wholesale and you get gifts and they outweigh the cost. And wait a second, if you had such a good deal, why didn't you just sell me the deal? No, it's a lottery, it's a lot of fun. If you think about it for a minute, you'd realize I'm asking for trouble. There's no way that giving my credit card number makes sense. What? Can I have it in writing? Yeah. you could go, you could see it on our website. Okay. So very often, if we would pay attention, then there are problematic situations where you shouldn't deceive yourself into thinking, I can manage this. No, you're entering a problematic situation. You're entering something that's problematic. I got an invitation by a Forex company to invest by them. So that was very interesting, because there's new regulations in Israel, and they had to write the following form on their form. It says like this. When you buy our product, meaning let's say you buy one currency versus another currency, we don't guarantee you that we're actually buying the currency. We might bet against you. We don't think there's a conflict of interests here, because we will, if you win, you'll win, meaning it's all out there. But this is interesting, because once upon a time they were saying that that's what the forex companies are doing, but it wasn't in writing. Now it's in writing. I get this from a top forex company in Israel that's regulated, and on their contract they write, it's very possible that all your deals are fictitious. Now, once upon a time I thought to myself, that's not so bad, because if technically they have to pay out if I win, so let's say I imagine that let's take the Israeli shekel versus the dollar. I believe the shekel will go up to $4. So I'm going to buy 100,000 shekel, and it goes up to $4. So I made myself a profit of whatever. Right now it's at 3.7 something or 3.8. Let's say I made myself 20,000 shekel. Fine. 2,000 shekel. So what do I care if it's fictitious or not? They'll pay up. Meaning they have to pay me, right? That's regulated. Whether it's real or not shouldn't bother me. But then I thought about it a second more, and I said, let's look at it. Netanel Frankenthal is one person. They're a company that has looked at all the statistics. If they realize that it's in their interest not to put me on the market, to let me play a dummy account, that means they know that statistically I'll lose. That means that they're better off keeping all my money and not investing it in the market, because they can be sure that a very high percentage of people will lose everything. So then why do I think I'm smarter than them? Why do I think I'm going to be the exception? Meaning the stats are on their side. They know they're winning. These companies are making millions every year. So then obviously, it's not so simple to win on Forex. On the contrary, you are more likely to lose. I can have a great theory, but the facts of the matter are they're telling me we won't necessarily buy it because, in other words, we won't buy it. We won't buy the product you think you're buying because we have no reason to. We can make much more money just winning on your loss. I mean, you understand the difference. If they buy the product, so then they only get the spread. meaning the difference. They bought it for this much, they sell it to me for that much. If they didn't buy it and the account goes belly up, they don't have to pay me anything and they got everything, not just the spread. Right? They got, if I invested through them $100,000, they got all $100,000, not just the spread on the buy, not just the profit. So obviously, if they're saying that, then they know something I don't. Shlomo HaMelech says, look at things before you enter them and realize there are things that the chances of you getting it on all sides is like the chances of capturing the wind. You know you can't capture the wind. You know you're not going to enclose the wind in a box. Recognize there are things that are bigger than you. You're not going to capture them. So Shlomo HaMelech says, it could be the woman who decides she's going to be dishonest with you. It could be the partner. It could be the company. But realize that when things are dishonest, it's very hard to the point of being impossible to enclose them on every front. That's the mashal of closing it in a box like the wind. And again, we like to think to ourselves, I'll do it. I'll get it right. Yaakov Avinu also thought he'd get it right, and we see he didn't. Pasuk Yud Zayin, one of my favorite pasukim. There was a student here, Daniel Paltzik, who always used to quote me this pasuk. Barzel be barzel yachad. Just as metal sharpens metal, ve'ish yachad penei re'yehu, so too a person with his friends sharpens one another. So he used to tell me that. He'd walk me home and we'd be talking on the way. He always tell me, barzel be barzel yachad. That if we talk, so then we could sharpen one another. So that's another important point. Very often we think we can succeed alone. I got it. I know what I'm doing. Our assumption is that most people, most of the time, will benefit from having someone to share their thoughts with. At the end of the day, having someone to talk to sharpens all of us. We all grow from it. I got a very interesting phone call. A person is a young rabbi, and he said he got a question, but based on his own experience, he had the following thought. He said a person called him who was suffering from mental illness, and this young rabbi said to me that he in his past also suffered from it, and he said he saw on his own that when he had someone to talk to, 90% of his problems were resolved. He said, as bad as his situation was when he was going through it, that just having someone to talk to resolved 90% of the issue. So he was asking, when this person is asking him the questions, how much should he give weight to the problem, and how much should he think, if only we'll let the person talk, if I'll sit and I'll talk to him for the next hour, maybe then the problem is less severe, so then I shouldn't consider it such a big problem. A guy says, should I fast on Tanis Esther? Right? But why shouldn't you fast on Tanis Esther? Well, right now I'm having a very hard time, so let's talk about it for an hour. Maybe after that hour he could fast on Tanis Esther. I mean, that was his line of reasoning. But the opening comment that he said to me was an eye-opener. He said that 90% of his problems were resolved when he could talk to someone. We can't do it alone. Shlomo HaMelech says in every almost every realm, just like metal can't sharpen itself, you need another piece of metal to sharpen it, so do the human being. You want to grow sharper, you need to talk to other people. You need to work with other people. There's something that comes from rubbing shoulders with other people, exchanging ideas, hearing perspectives, hearing where we're wrong. We had a meeting to choose a board to make certain decisions in the yeshuv. So they asked me if I thought Rabbi A and Rabbi B should be on the board to decide on a certain topic. So I said, Rabbi A and I, we don't see the world the same way. And I think it's a good idea he should be on the board. So I said, what do you mean? How will you be productive? I said, because Rabbi A and I don't see the world the same way, so then between the two of us, maybe he's right. Who said the way I see it is right? We'll get, hopefully, to the right conclusion. We're very different. We have very different backgrounds. We see things very differently. It's good we should sit on the same board. That way, either I'll learn from him, or he'll learn from me, or sometimes in arguments he'll win, and that's good. So we need other people. We only have a certain amount of understanding on our own. Pasuk Yudchet. Notzer te'ena yochal pirya. A person who watches the fig will eat its fruit. Figs are a unique tree. They don't ripen at the same time. Every time you come to a fig tree, you can find other figs that are ripe within season, right? They have a season, but they don't all ripen at once. So a fig tree is a lot of fun. because you can come today and pick a few fruits. Come tomorrow, you have new fruits that have ripened. It's a lot of fun. We once had a fig tree growing in our yard. You have to learn how to check the figs. But once you've learned, I took a two-hour course just on checking figs. But once you learn how to clean and check figs, it's going to be a lot of fun. My kids were like, every day, throughout the summer, they'd be picking figs. Notzer teina, he who watches the fig tree, yochal piria. People very often say, why can't I succeed in this field or that field? Did you watch the figs? Very often people look to make quick money in fields that they didn't study. That's the biggest way that people lose money, by investing in things they don't understand. Did you watch the fig? Shlomo Amel says, you want to eat the fruit, you have to watch the fig. You're not going to catch it when it's going to ripen if you didn't watch the fruit. And it's the same thing with the stock market. It's the same thing with real estate. People think, invest in real estate, you'll make money. Maybe, and maybe not. There are plenty of people who have invested and they did not. Watch the fig. Pay attention. Learn what you're investing in. People want to throw their money out and make money back. Most of the time it doesn't work. Most of the time, for most of the people, that's how they lose money. People invest. You see advertisements every day. There are advertisements, buy an apartment in Poland for dirt cheap. Buy an apartment in South Carolina, in Illinois. Go buy yourself an apartment for dirt cheap. Make money like everyone else. You have any clue what's going on out there? Do you even know if the apartment exists? We'll buy you an apartment in Bangladesh. Rent it out. 30% profit. How much do you know about the company? Shlomo Amel says, he watches the fig. You can't do it without watching it. You got to do your homework. You got to do your research. You got to do your due diligence. Then yochal piria, you could eat the fruit. V'shomer Adonav yechubad. So too, a person who watches over his master will ultimately gain honor. And this goes with the idea of being a faithful worker. People think I'll succeed in the company because everyone gets promotions. Doesn't work that way. Most of the time, if you did your job, Shomer Adonav, you looked out for the interests of your master, meaning your employer, so then Yechubad, then you'll find you get the honors. It doesn't work the other way. So Shlomo Amech is saying both sides of the coin. If you watch the asset, then you will ultimately bear its fruit. If you watch your owner's assets, then you'll gain your owner's, your master, your owner, your employer, their honor. Kamaim apanim lapanim. Just as when you look in the water, you see a reflection of your own face. Kein lev ha'adam la'adam. That's the way human hearts are. How many times do people come in and say, my wife is self-centered? No, you're self-centered. No, you didn't hear me. My wife is self-centered. I heard you. What you see in her is what you are. But that's not true. I'm a kind person. I'm a giving person. She's self-centered. I'm a good person. Right, that's what we all say. We have a rule. We see in others the faults we have in ourselves. But I'm good. It's she who has the problem. And this is a recurring theme that spouses will always say, the other one has the problem. Which chapter? 27. Shlomo HaMelech says, you should know people's hearts reflect one another, whether we notice it or not. We're a reflection of what we see. And that's one of the keys also to public speaking. If you want to connect to your audience, you have to like them. If you look down at them, then you can't talk to them. It's an all entertainment. The second you don't value the audience, they sense it. And they have a very hard time connecting to you or connecting to anything you say. You have to look at them and value them. A person wanted to come and volunteer to learn with a group of guys in our shul. He said, we'll learn, we'll uplift your whole community. So it's a very nice thing, I said to him. He said, these poor guys, someone has to teach them something. I said, you can't teach them anything. So he said, why can't I teach? I said, you're looking down at them. If you think you're going to come and teach them because they're a bunch of poor guys and you're the wonderful guy who's going to impart your wisdom, that no one's going to learn from you. If you value them, if you see wonderful human beings who have done wonderful things in their lives, and it happens to be there are areas where they could benefit that you've learned and they haven't yet, fine, you could connect to them. But if you're coming and you're looking down at them, you can't teach. No, you won't be able to. There won't be any connection. At the end of the day, we learn from people. We don't learn the ideas. The ideas we hear because we're open to hearing them. Real learning usually takes place because you connect to the person, at least in Torah. Shlomo Amel says, just as you see your own reflection in the water, that's the way people's hearts connect. And that's why we find that very often if there's someone we like learning from them many topics. It doesn't have to be one thing, because you're learning from the human being. It's the heart to the heart that's talking. It's not just the content. What did we learn today? Let's review. We learned a person who takes... you're ahead of us. We learned he who takes collateral, he who signs responsibility for someone else has to take into account the worst case scenario, right? Right? He signed the responsibility, take his garment. We spoke about blessing a friend out loud. We gave a few interpretations.
Can be a curse to bless.
Right? That you're hurting someone if you're blessing them out loud. And the idea that pay attention when people talk to you. If they exaggerate the emotion, then they might not be saying the emotion they're saying. Then we spoke about the drip in the house, which is like
a woman
who's fighting all the time. And then we spoke about you can't, right? You won't
even
be
an unfaithful woman. You cannot change her.
Right. And then we spoke about thinking that you can hold in someone who's not trustworthy. That's like thinking you can encase the wind, and you're looking for trouble. Look, that's what you were saying. Shemen yemino yikra. You're looking for a cure. In other words, a person who thinks they can take a problematic, untrusted situation and encase it and protect themselves, they're already looking for the illness. They're going to need the cure. Then we spoke about metal. Metal can't sharpen itself. It needs another metal to sharpen against. So too, you need someone else. You need someone else. You can't do it alone. And here, by the way, is one of the great assets in marriage that people lose. My friend and I, okay, I had a very good friend 7-8 years ago. We both entered a position. We both started working for a certain institution, and we both thought we should get a car. We both had an identical commute, and my wife told me, don't do it. And I didn't agree with my wife. And my wife told me, we will end the month, if not in the red, then almost there. And the car is going to cost us so much, it's a mistake. And I didn't agree with my wife. And I drew charts, and I interviewed people, and I came back with information, and I had all the logical proofs worked out. And my wife said, it's all nice, it's wrong. So I said, I spoke to a lot of people, including your parents. I think I have figured out in terms of what the costs and we're paying to send our kids to school, and I'm paying transportation for myself to get to this job, and I can see how much we'd save and how much the cost is. And again, I brought all these points, and my wife said no. So Chazal say, in areas of the mundane world, listen to your wife. So I looked at her and didn't agree and said, I'm going to listen to my wife. And I didn't agree. And every day I would go to that bus stop in the rain, and it was a bitter winter that winter, and they were just constructing this bridge down here, and traffic was horrendous because they were constructing the rails for the light rail, and so literally they stopped traffic in the city for a whole year. Traffic was crazy here. And I was in the midst of all that, and I had to get to work on time. And sometimes I'd have to stand at the bus stop an hour early to get there on time because I never knew when the bus would come. It wasn't forecastable under those circumstances. And every day I'd stand there thinking, Chazal said, listen to your wife on monetary matters. I'm listening to my wife. Boy, don't I agree with her. My friend at the same time bought a car. And every day I'd see him driving up at the end of his commute. And I said to him, do me a favor, can you share with me your expenses on the car? Because my wife and I are having this argument, and in the meantime, I gave in. If you don't mind, can you tell me? So he said to me a beautiful line. He said, I can tell you, but you're thinking of buying a cheap car for 5-6,000 shekel. I know what I'm doing. I'm an expert in these things. I bought an expensive car for 20,000 shekel. If you'd buy the car you think you're going to buy, you'd end up with much more expenses than I'm going to have this year because you don't know anything about cars. And you wouldn't buy a good car like me. I bought a very good car. I said, fine, but let me see. Let me learn from this, okay? If you don't mind, share with me what goes on. By the end of the year, the amount of expenses he had that we couldn't have forecasted, by the end of the year was so big that my wife was 100% right. Now, on paper, she was wrong. But when I just looked at what happened with his car, how many things went wrong with his car? Now, he got a good car, and he knew what he was doing choosing a car, right? According to him. My point is, when we read this pasuk, you need another metal to sharpen. You have to be open to getting that benefit. If at the end of every argument, you're not going to hear what the other side says, and you'll always feel like they're wrong, they didn't prove it, I'm right, so then you didn't benefit from it. You can't benefit from having that other metal if you're never going to accept that benefit. Part of the key here is, metal sharpens metal, that means I'm not always going to do what I said. In order for them to sharpen me, that means I'm going to accept what they said. By the end of the year, I saw my wife was right. But as the year progressed, I certainly wasn't convinced. Took a while till I saw it. And finally, we saw the final two psukim tonight was, you watch the fig, you'll eat the fruit. You watch the interests of your employer, you'll ultimately get honor. The idea that you can't assume you're going to make a quick buck. It involves investment. Pay attention, understand the market you're investing in, then you'll be able to eat the fruits of it. And finally, just as you see your own reflection in the water, so too you should know, in your friend's heart, you're seeing a reflection of your own heart. And if a person can move himself to love his friend, then a person can find his friend loving him. It takes that movement of ourselves.